paper, man. I thought about how we deal with this, what we just discussed. I think we have at least two issues. The first one I would qualify as a more narrow scope question, this verification of the value of fee approach. Does it then in the coverage units include investment service? And we heard there is a lack of clarity already about that, how to read the words. And I think we have to go to the board to inform them and then they consider, if any, what we should do with that. And the second one is a more broader issue, that some appear to disagree with the staff analysis of the board's conclusion and the appropriateness of that, that for the general model, the only service is the insurance service. Also for that, I think the next step is that we have to inform the board about the discussion today, and then if any, okay, take further actions by the board, because we cannot, I think, decide it today. It has to go to the board. Want to clarify that before we go to the next point, which is then Haggit on implementation challenges outlook report.
Yes. Thank you, Martin. So, agenda paper 6. So this paper reports comments from TRG members, from you, in response to the staff outreach about implementation concerns that arise applying the requirements in IFRS 17 in three areas. The first one is presentation of groups of insurance contracts in the statement of financial position. Second one, premium received applying the premium allocation approach. And the third one is subsequent treatment of insurance contract acquired in the settlement period. So this report is included in agenda paper 6. This paper does not include staff views. The outreach was performed following our discussion in February meeting. TRG members indicated that implementation challenges arising because the requirements would cause significant changes from existing practice. The staff have identified a few areas that the staff believe would benefit from development of additional supporting materials, so that's in the paper as well. The staff will provide this outreach report together with the basis for the requirements of IFRS 17 that are subject to this outreach and your comments from this meeting today at the next board meeting. Our intention is that at a future meeting, once the board has the opportunity to consider more complete information from the discussions of the TRG, we will ask the board to consider what, if any, action is needed to support implementation of IFRS 17. So we ask you today whether the report appropriately reflects your comments. That's it, and I guess I open up to see if you have any comments.
Okay. First, thank you for opening us up and asking for the outreach, and I can see that a lot of that has been reflected in here. I think when I read this report, my honest opinion, it doesn't convey the issues that we've really got. And you just mentioned that this is a change from existing practice. It isn't. I'm not going to sell you a different policy after IFRS 17 to what I do now. I'm not going to manage my business differently. I'm still going to need the information that I need now, which are things like my unearned premium, my trade receivables, my liability for incurred claims. I'm going to need all of that data in the same way as I do now. This is not asking me to change that. What the standard has asked me to do in paragraph 78 is to disaggregate all of that information into groups and then to re-aggregate it as groups of assets and groups of liabilities. And so when I read this, the scale of that problem is not coming through at all. The other part that isn't coming here, which is very important, I think, is what to do with that information when you've got it. And you're going to be representing your balance sheet, groups of contracts and asset position, groups in a liability position. What can I infer from that? What can I understand from that? And that's a question I'd like to ask the staff. What do you think will come out of that for users of the financial statements? Because we are at a loss to see what value that will provide in future financial statements. So this, I think, is the single biggest issue facing P&C and general insurance. It's also the top issue across the Australian market. And I'm sure that will be reflected in other markets. But certainly for general insurers, this is one of the most significant issues, and it just isn't coming through in this paper for the two reasons. One is not changing my practices, but you're asking me to provide additional information, and there is a significant cost in doing that. enormous cost in doing that. And the second part is what meaning is it comes out of it. There really, we cannot see any valuable information that will be added in the financial statements from producing this information. Mm-hmm. So that response is probably focused around topics one and two. I'll come back to three later, but I think it's probably worth focusing on those first.
Zaytun.
Thank you. Thinking positively, I want to commend IESB for the outreach here, which acknowledges certain implementation challenges. However, I share Anne's comment as to what would be the next step. You know, how do we make it more useful? Yeah. The other issue is three items has been identified here. You know, I do not summarize all the significant challenges that we face here. I acknowledge, you know, it was agreed in the last meeting that we only deal with these three issues. So I would suggest that preparer members of the TRG work together on maybe a more comprehensive list of key issues, and come up with some more specific recommendation. So one example is that reinsurance issue that I mentioned when we discussed paper 4. Martin, I did take your advice to talk to Leslie, and up that, you know, we were talking about different things. She was talking about projecting cash flow from contracts already in force. We do that all the time. Yeah. So what I'm talking about is projection of cash flow from contract yet to be issued. So I mean that's the only saving grace, we all agree, is that 90-day breakout clause in most reinsurance treaty. In case you don't have that, you know, better go talk to your reinsurer. Yeah. But that's how I would suggest that maybe we work together to come up with something.
I thought that was the purpose of this outreach, that you're giving us your views, what the problem are, but you are saying now that is not summarized correctly by staff, or do you have not provided us with the right thing? So I'm not clear on that. What is the problem? You have not made it dramatically in your feedback, or is this summary of the staff not correct?
No, and I think that's it. That's understated. With the information that we've provided has clearly been portrayed in part of this, but it's the extent of the problem that is missing. So, for example, words like using information as less relevant, that's certainly not the outreach that was provided. The question that was asked was, you know, this is actually potentially misleading information. It's information that we cannot explain to use it. So it's quite differently portrayed in this report than was provided as outreach, certainly from my perspective.
I think there's something that is important in the purpose of this outreach. I think the next step is to take this to the board and report about what is the challenges that are raised by TRG members. And you need to consider that not all the board members are experts with insurance. We need to be able to explain to them what is the problem. I think Martin last time said, but you need to explain to me what is the problem with the systems. So I think that the first thing that we try to do is explain, and I hope that we did gather a good understanding from your multiple answers about what it is about this system that makes things complicated. And we also reflect your observations about whether information is relevant or not relevant to shareholders or other related parties. So I first need to understand whether it's accurate in the way that I explain to the board what is the challenge. And I get that one of the comments that you're saying is that we might not capture the scale of how complex it is, how expensive this exercise is, and how strongly you feel about this information is not the way that you would expect your investor would like to see. So I can reflect the scale aspect when we report to the board, but I first need to understand whether we describe it right, because if they will ask us, we need to be able to explain the problem, because otherwise there's no way to have a proper understanding.
I think the action is quite sound. So you've taken a lot of information, and that is quite easy to understand. I think it's what the paper conveys. So it's the lack of the scale of the problem, the lack of problem around the information. And if I guess the biggest concern is a report like this goes to the the ISB. And if I was to read that, I would actually see that this could be resolved through education, explanation, and that's not the case. That's not. It presents as if that's a potential solution. I don't see that that is a potential solution. Does that make sense?
I'm not in this.
But you have sufficient information to bring the scales and into the paper to the board?
So when we will report to the board, we will also report the summary of this meeting. This is something that we might pick up.
Yes. I mean, the purpose of the outreach, remember, was for us to understand why the implementation is challenging, not how much you wanted us to change the standards. So I think that's the focus of this paper.
That's
really.
Maybe if the next step, maybe
that's
want to inform the board,
and
also kind of your concerns about, you think it is not any useful for the investors, clearly before the board decides anything, they want to listen to investors if they agree with your thinking and other things. That is not that in May we decide change or change not. That is not the next step. Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I did really welcome the approach, because I think, we've talked before, the first objective here, I think, is very much what do the words in the standards say. Then when we've we're clear what the words in the standards say. Well, what does that mean? What are the implications of that? And I think, particularly for general insurance, the implications of what the standards say are, they're very significant in terms of the cost and in terms of the information that you're resulting with. You're as Anne said, you're regrouping stuff in a different way that I think is less helpful and makes it harder to manage our business. So I think, and I'm not sure that those questions were maybe asked directly in the outreach, because when I've talked to others in the market about this, people agree and the paper, said some TRG members or a few TRG members thought that, but so maybe we just need to be a bit clearer on does everybody think that, or what's the degree of consensus. But I think more importantly is what do we do about it. I agree with Anne, that's where I felt a bit of education, I don't think that's going to solve the problem.
I'll just say,
but that is maybe a misunderstanding, because we said, we should not have a kind of staff recommendation, but we thought maybe there is also not, in some aspects, not clarity. And therefore, in this paper, we have a little bit of education to clarify. Some education that can solve the problem. That is not the purpose.
This is not a staff view, but I will add to that that it says, so some of the responses and the discussions we had, we found out that there's a bit of unclarity, for example, about how PAA works. And some were saying that the PAA is actually revenue recognition based on cash flow. So we need to be responsible for the people that follow this discussion. So I needed to be very careful when I include this outreach, which is very helpful, to also add this appendix to say, well, this is how the standard work for PAA. So just in terms of responsibility to what is echoed outside this discussion.
Roman.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I also would like really to emphasize the welcome that you provide an opportunity here to challenge certain topics which are really big implementation issues. To the point of Sai Zhong, that this is, of course, not a complete list of all implementation issues we have next to interpretation issues we anyway discuss. I think it's more a bit of kind of random topics, because they have been addressed to the TRG and you have dismissed them as being non-interpretation issues, and some of us have said, but nevertheless, we have an issue there because we have problems to implement that, or it's not possible, or undue cost and effort. But it's not a systematic collection of topics where I think preparers have large challenges to implement the standard. I think that is only the risk that someone gets the feeling, these are now the key topics raised by TRG members as being the key implementation challenges. That's not. Nevertheless, this is one of the real key issues. I agree with Anne that does not come so strongly through. Maybe when this goes to the board, I would also welcome if it can be emphasized a bit stronger, that the significance of the topic is really very high, That would be my first suggestion. Secondly, maybe as no of the TRG members is coming from a reinsurer, one specific concern I would like to bring into the paper are concerns from reinsurers which have very complex netting arrangement with their counterparts, where it's even much more difficult to really identify the different cash flows for different contracts, because a lot of things are netted out. So I think that is something where a reinsurance company might, I can provide you some more material from a reinsurance perspective, but also the practicability of the requirement, I think, is questionable. So the risk I see, if it's presented in this manner to the board, that the board says, okay, it's a problem, we see that, but there are many implementation problems. They just somehow need to deal with that, especially as you put in that allocation might be appropriate shortcut or approach to somehow get around large investments. I don't think that this is a valid conclusion in practice, that we can use allocation in a way that we avoid large system implementation costs. So that has, I think, the way it's described right now has the danger that someone is drawing that conclusion. So I would like to reemphasize that allocation, from my perspective, is not an approach we can use for all that topics. So if the requirement stays as it is, it seems to be, to put it very clearly, it's not to be cannot be implemented given the time frame we have very clearly, and also the budget would be something on a different scale if we need to implement that compared to already very high budgets. I think for large group we are talking about 3-digit million budgets for IFRS 17, but if we need to go back to the core systems, and then we are talking about completely different amounts, and that is something maybe outside the insurance industry is also not so transparent, that financial institutions, bank and insurers really need to invest a lot of money into finance and accounting systems on a completely different scale than other industries. So it's not uncommon that we invest in $1 billion or more into contract administration systems over a couple of years to harmonize things. And if you touch then these core systems and want to draw some additional data or connect them in a different way, these are large, massive projects which have another scale as the IFRS 17 project already alone. And that maybe does not come through fully.
Yeah, but one question, and you say that this is a problem, but maybe one of many that I'm understanding you. And that, okay, no, that is a key problem for non-life insurers in Australia. So what is the scale? Do we have 10 of this scale, or is this a one big scale problem? So I'm really confused about.
But I think that was not the question to the DRG members in the outreach. Okay, please list all the significant topics and bring them in the order of priority. I think we only asked to.
This is a real problem. People say, okay, that is not clear what is the scale. And you said, okay, clarification, we need the scale. And I understand from you, for at least your company, it is the biggest issue.
Well, across the Australian
TRG.
For
your company, it may be one of many. Maybe I've misunderstood it. I don't know.
For me, it's one of the top three priorities.
Top three, okay. Yours top. No, that is a clear.
I went in across the Australian market.
Top three.
Top three, also for us.
That's clear. Yeah. Sue.
Just a small point and comment that Roman made me think of it. So certainly this is not intended to be a list of, you know, the main operational concerns TRG members have, because by design the TRG is set up to answer the questions that have been submitted. So, but it might be useful for people when they're reading the summary of the discussion, but also for the board when we present it, to put it in the context of these came in as, you know, implementation questions and led to this outreach, so that it's put in that context. It might be helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe just one more thing to mention, because there is a part of the market which is a little bit in a kind of black hole at the moment because of the way that our group is composed. It's the roles market. And there, this is a very, very dramatic issue because of the subscription nature of that market and the way that information on premiums and claims is collected electronically. So I understand that they have not been submitting issues because of the way that the market operates and that their regulator operates, and that they have been given almost like a dispensation that Lloyd's will look into it at a syndicate level way longer into the future, but it will serve its problem.
Similar to the netting
But also because of the way that, you know, I think the other issue that is part of the educational paper about, you know, buying contracts into a settlement period, there is something called reinsurance to close into that Lloyd's market, which is a very, very, you know, it's a Pandora box on its own. And we shouldn't ignore the fact that that market exists because it reinsures 40 to 60% of the risks globally. And it will become a problem, although at the moment it kind of seems to be a little bit latent.
Mm.
Yes. I agree that the document is fairly portraying the answer that I provided. And actually, there are three topics being discussed. Separate presentation of contracts which are asset liabilities, premium received, and subsequent treatment of insurance contracts acquired in the settlement period. I would put aside the third one, and I would concur with the comments by Anne and Roman that the intensity of the issue might be reflected in a different manner, especially in light of the point raised by Anne as to the relevance of the separate presentation of assets and liability. This is something which I believe is very important, and that would be also an issue on my side.
Thank you. Leslie?
Just to answer your question directly, when I was reading this, I felt that paragraph 13 missed the point. You say, observe that amounts that they had previously presented aggregated as line items would need to be disaggregated into groups of insurance contracts that are assets and groups that are liabilities. It's not quite right. The problem is that we need to identify premiums received and or due but not received, all of these amounts. It's not just premiums received. There are other amounts like that for us, for example, incurred but not reported. The trouble is we have to identify them by group for the purpose of assessing whether the groups are in an asset position or a liability position. And that in itself is complex. We don't have the system set up to do it. And as importantly, in my view, the benefit of the information of splitting between groups that are in an asset position, groups that are a liability position is dubious. Now, that was not requested specifically in the outreach, so we did not say so, but we believe that that information is not useful to users. All of the insurance contract liabilities are present value of outflows minus present value of inflows, and just because at some points in time one happens to flip positive or negative, there's no meaningful, useful information that is provided by that separate presentation. So we cannot see any benefit to spending money to being able to, that we would not need to spend for any other purpose.
Mm-hmm. No, that is understood. It's a cost benefit.
Only a point. I don't know if I guess it is not part of this session, but I guess that some TRG members also provide some information about potential solutions to this topic.
So it's included in the outreach, although we did not invite this, but that's fine. Some have suggested potential solutions, and I reflected this in the report as well. So it's there. Mm.
Okay, the second.
I think we talked mainly about the first two aspects.
The report you're referring to is the paper or is something else?
The paper covers the three topics that came out of the last meeting. So we were talking about the area that covers the first two, which is presentation on the balance sheet and the premium allocation approach. I did not hear any additional reflections on the subsequent treatment for insurance contract acquired in the settlement period, whether we describe the challenges or the feedback appropriately in this report in a way that we can reflect this to the board then. So do you have any aspects here that we missed? Or
Ms. Lee, is that you?
Okay. I think the Canadian General Insurers did express a great deal of discomfort with this change, and basically the reason is that they'd be reporting significantly. It would distort their results to have some items as if they're in settlement and others that were purchased in settlement for exactly the same from their perspective. Yeah. But in particular, they were concerned about the gross up of the revenue on the balance sheet.
And I've included that,
And?
Less of an issue around here, but there was one area I just wanted to point out. Being an insurer is going to be using the PAA. And this happened last time in the last meeting. But this, it states in 34A, an entity applies the general model for the contracts acquired in a settlement period. So because the period over which claims could develop is longer than 1 year. So this keeps coming up. The one-year rule for PAA is one of the rules, but you can also look at whether you get a materially similar outcome. And,
that's correct.
If we could just clarify that again, because actually in practice...
I think that it came from the comments that we received. So a lot of the comments reflect concern that if it would extend more than 1 year, they would need to prove more that they still meet the PAA. So I just was reflecting the comments that I received. The standard is clear that you can enter the PAA whether you meet the first criteria, which is 1 year, or you, provide assessment for the second criteria. So this is just reflecting what we received, and a lot of people were saying, oh, we are concerned that we might not meet the PAA. So that's it. Yeah.
Maybe we should just expand it a bit.
That's right, because readers will look at that, and it just reinforces this idea of 1 year is a sharp line. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And in practice, PAA eligibility is running, testing in the market, so those people are using PAA. It's running out a lot beyond 1 year, and that's worth people knowing as well, because that might alleviate some of the problems.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay. Say, John.
Thank you. In response to a question from Hagit here, the topic three, I wouldn't put it as our top three implementation challenges.
Okay. Thank you.
Joe?
Just on the contracts acquired and their settlement period, that is an issue for our RGI business is concerned about that, partly because building the capability to do a building block approach whenever you actually don't need it currently, but you might need it, is not palatable. It's so uncertain whether you will need it or whether you won't. And I don't think it's providing, particularly helpful information, because you're generally speaking buying business that's similar to what you've already got, and then to have it in a different measurement model. I can see theoretically why, but in practice, I think we found that difficult.
When I worked in a bank where they bought insurance portfolios in their settlement period, and try to get house revenue out of it. Mary.
Just one observation, if I may, where one of the remedies for these balance sheet presentation issues is approximation. And can I just present the auditor's point of view, where I would feel distinctly uncomfortable without further guidance saying that approximation is the only solution. I think that puts auditors potentially in a very uncomfortable position.
Kevin?
Thanks, Martin. I just wanted to add to Joe's point that, the implication of moving from pre-allocation to building block approach is not just you need to work at DSM. Your disclosures and presentation are really different. The, test for onerous contracts and grouping is very different. So, and then we also mentioned that the revenue completely changes. You end up basically recognizing revenue for the gross amount of the claims. It's a real significant additional expenditure for companies to think about it. They otherwise PAA, but this one thing could happen. And as Joe said, you've got to plan now to do it, because who knows in 2 years' time if you do an acquisition.
But wouldn't people, when I said my example, who buying portfolios from others in the settlement period, and if you would change that, they would not get any revenue out of that business. Is that also okay? And do you don't have clients who would struggle with that? When you're referring all to acquisitions, right? Not to portfolio transfers. I struggle with that because when I can imagine if I'm in that business where I'm buying portfolios in a settlement period, I would not so happy if I cannot recognize any revenue out of that.
So I think what happens today under US GAAP is you sort of say, I'm taking on obligations. So it's almost like you're buying an asset or buying a liability. And so you sort of deposit account the acquisition. You basically go, you know, credit, liability, debit, cash that I paid. And then you account for changes from then onwards. So, you know, is it getting better or worse over time? And that's what people do today, and I think there's no one who has a problem with that.
Right? So that's how it is recorded in regulatory reports, by the way, as well. Any Part 7 transfer gets reported into the liability for claims, not for premiums.
So we know how it works today.
Okay, Francesco.
In response to this problem, the adverse settlement coverage, is the ISB contemplating the possibility of an amendment to the standard? In the sense that you could still maintain the same measurement as it is today. I don't think that there is anyone calling for a difference, but effectively introduce the requirement that if you are running off a CSM out of an acquired liability for incurred claims, you cannot present it as a revenue and expense. You move it effectively where it goes below the line, still part of the insurance service result, but where you go effectively with the runoff of the risk adjustment on the claims liability. That at least will avoid the confusion on the investor reading the financial statements, because the revenue will only be represented in the company that sold the cost in the first place. And if there is a wholesale purchase of a claims liability, that company will still have the profit, but the revenue will not be represented.
Well, I don't know if it will confuse investors. So we will first report it to the board. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, if the board needs or wants to have some actions, then we're discussing.
Yeah.
I have not insisted already.
Why don't you recognize it from initial recognition? Isn't there a way to do that? I thought somebody told me there was another standard that did that. That when you acquire something, you go back to initial recognition.
So pretend that you initiated the contract yourself.
Yeah. I'm not an expert, but my chief accountant told me there was another standard that did that.
Don't know.
That would be maybe a way to solve the issue without changing the standard.
Yeah, usual acquisition.
I have to go back.
Do you want me to?
Do we? Maybe.
Yeah. So just to be clear, what I'm going to reflect upon in the summary. So just to see that I pick up the significant things, because we want this to be concise and clear to the board. So TRG members agreed that the report, first of all, reflects the challenges identified by TRG members for applying the requirements in the standard. TRG members emphasize that the scale of the challenge is as high, is significant in terms of the complexity involved and the costs. So I hope I got this one right. The other thing that you've said here is that most of you consider this as a top key implementation issue that could be others, but this is really significant in your kind of priorities in terms of identifying the challenges. Some of you noted that this might be relevant, the first topic that we discuss about also for insurance or companies that are active in the Lloyd's market as well, so just another aspect, so I can add that as well. Some of you reflected that an allocation would not be appropriate. And another reflection about audit perspective as well. And another point that Sue made, which is correct, the way that we started the whole thing is that we are dealing, first of all, with implementation questions here. So we started as an implementation question, and this is how it turned into a discussion about implementation challenges, which is fine. The last point that I have on kind of my list is that about the business combination or acquisition of claims in the settlement period is just to be clear that the PAA, you can meet the PAA approach even if the contract has coverage more than 1 year. Yeah. Nothing else was intended here.
I would also add that some members questioned the validity of the information provided, the usefulness of the information
yes.
provided.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Then we move to reporting on other questions submitted.
Getting to the end.